Thank you. Be seated.
The court is ready to hear argument from Relator in the Texas Board of Chiropractic Examiners versus the 8th Court.
Jennifer has read the book of our
This is an original mandamus proceeding by Relator, the Texas Board of Chiropractic Examiners, against the 8th Court of Appeals. Relator brings this petition to challenge an order of the 8th Court of Appeals that granted a temporary restraining order and suspended enforcement of a judgment that had affirmed an order of the Board of Chiropractic Examiners suspending a license to practice chiropractic. That order had been affirmed by the trial court, further expressed statutes expressly authorized the board to enforce that order pending appeal. The state does not lightly bring a mandamus action against a court of appeals or against a trial court, particularly not where the state is going to have to appear back before the court to argue merits of that case. However, in this case, the issues involved go beyond just one chiropractic license. They go to the proper balance of power and roles of the trial court and the Court of Appeals. They also go to the Administrative Procedure Act and whether the APTRA and whether the state may enforce orders that are subject to substantial evidence review pending appeal, and whether the Board of Chiropractic Examiners can enforce its orders under the Texas Chiropractic Act pending appeal. The central issues in the case are whether a stay of judgment under Rules 47 and 49 can in effect continue a temporary injunction that was entered solely to preserve the status quo pending trial on the merits. The second issue is, our argument is that if that cannot be done, then the Court of Appeals lacks the authority to do so, therefore their order is void. And it is our position that Rules 47 and 49 do not authorize extending a temporary injunction. What in fact they have done is issue an original injunction, and it's our position they do not have the authority to do so.
Isn't the temporary injunction moot after the trial on the merits?
That is our position, Your Honor, and that simply filing supersedious cannot automatically extend or really resurrect that order.
If the state does not take lightly mandamus in the Court of Appeals, why is the state content to languish in the trial court for 3 years and not to wait in the Court of Appeals at all?
Well, Your Honor, it wasn't counsel of record when the temporary injunction was entered, but there are certain facts that are significant, and I'll try to offer some explanations for that apparent delay in enforcing the board's order. The board first entered its order suspending Dr. Boyd's license to practice chiropractic in August of 87. In November of 87, the board entered into an agreed injunction. That injunction set the cause for trial on January of 1988. There was never an agreement to extend that injunction. The case at one point, at two separate points, had been set for trial. Motions for continuance were filed.
By whom?
By Dr. Boyd, and those motions were granted. First, it was set for dismissal for lack of prosecution. A trial date was set. An order was granted retaining the case in the docket. Then a motion for continuance was filed to obtain an extension on the trial date that was set in the order retaining the case on the docket. In addition, in August, the state opposed a second motion for continuance when the case finally came to trial in August.
Were there other allegations other than this chiropractor who was claiming to cure dyslexia through his manipulations or something?
Well, the state's primary concern in this case was that he was offering dyslexia screening clinics as free clinics. At those clinics, virtually 99% of the people who came in for screening were diagnosed as having dyslexia. A very large number were signed up for $3,600 or $3,500 lifetime treatment guarantees. It was our position that those acts were deceptive. In addition,
did he do that during the term of the injunction in the trial court?
Yes, Your Honor. And
why weren't you concerned about 3 years of continuation of that practice?
Well, I believe the chiropractic board was concerned, and the reason the case was not prosecuted may have been lack of resources at the Attorney General's office. They may also have felt that the Attorney General's separate litigation under the consumer protection laws would resolve that problem. During the pendency of this suit, the Consumer Protection Division of the Attorney General's office was actively prosecuting a Deceptive Trade Practices Act claim against Dr. Boyd. That case now has been settled. So I would also
settled without with some form of monetary damage.
Yes, Your Honor.
Any injunction of cease and desist?
I don't believe that the Attorney General, through the Consumer Protection Division, has the authority to prevent him from practicing chiropractic. They did, however, I believe, prevent him from engaging in the same types of practices. We do currently have other complaints pending against the individual. But it's our position that even if it appears that we did not actively prosecute our right to prevent him from practicing chiropractic, that the issue of the Court of Appeals authority does not depend on whether we perhaps waived a right to enforce that injunction. Their authority is separate from whether we waive or consent to extending a temporary injunction past trial. And there is a very distinct difference between allowing someone to practice pending trial on the merits or review of the administrative record in the trial court, and once you win in the trial court, then implicitly accepting a continuation of an injunction to prevent you from enforcing that order. And I would say that even if we were deemed to have implicitly allowed him to practice pending trial on the merits, that cannot be taken to be consent to continue an injunction.
The suspension of 5 years is from the date of the board's order?
Well, I believe, Your Honor, that case law in after cases is such that when an order is suspended, that once the board's order is affirmed, that the 5-year suspension would run from that date, unless the order itself contained a beginning date certain rather than the date this order becomes effective.
So what is your position about that in this case?
When the board's order is affirmed, that the 5 years would begin at that time. There is still, however, in the event that this court determined that the order did not become effective for the full 5 years from the date of affirmance, there are still years left in the order. In other words, this is not a moot case. The last time this court addressed the issue of whether a temporary injunction can be extended was 1902. The case was the Riggins case, which is cited in our brief. And what had basically happened was a city council members were trying to oust a mayor. He obtained a temporary injunction allowing him to stay in office. That injunction was dissolved. He took appeal and attempted to argue that the injunction would continue. The court ultimately said, no, that injunction cannot automatically be continued or resurrected. What is also significant in this case is that our injunction was agreed. Usually agreed orders are construed at least somewhat as contracts. And the state never consented to extend that order past the time of trial. There is no automatic right to suspend the board's order. And that's why this case is so significant to us. To allow supersedious to suspend the board's order changes the balance and the burden of proof.
The trial court could have done that.
Yes, Your Honor, we believe the trial
court. You're just complaining about the appellate court doing it.
Well, Your Honor.
Or the trial court's decline.
If the trial court had done so, it's our position that what they would have had to do was say, we do not think the board's order is valid. We believe the legislature has indicated that pending final appeal, the board's order shall be enforceable, if I understand your question correctly. You can compare statutes such as the Dental Practice Act, which states that filing suit under the APTA for substantial evidence review of a licensing decision does suspend enforcement of the decision. But when the legislature has stated that the state may enforce its decision pending trial and appeal, then simply filing supersedious cannot give the licensee more than he would have had when he first went to court. It's our position that Dr. Boyd would have had to show entitlement to an equitable injunction And the only way in which he could do that is to show a violation of a vested property right or violation of constitutional rights. He had the opportunity to do that when he filed a motion to suspend enforcement of judgment. He failed to appear at that hearing, so there is no evidence, no prosecution of his right to suspend that judgment pending appeal. Unless there are questions, I'll reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
Is there remaining time? 5 minutes. Any questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May I please report? Ms. Susan Marston will present argument for respondent.
May it please the court, in a mandamus action, of course, the questions are whether there was a clear abuse of discretion by the Court of Appeals or whether the Court of Appeals order of October 3rd granting a stay of judgment and temporary restraining order was a void order without jurisdiction.
What is the basis of the authority exercised by the Court of Appeals in this case?
The basis cited by the Court of Appeals is Texas Rule of Appellate Procedure 49, and I believe there is also basis under the Government Code Section 22.221.
That addressed by the trial court, not the Court of Appeals?
Texas Rule of Appellate Procedure 49 grants the Court of Appeals the authority to review orders entered by the trial court. It is our position that there...
We're not talking about review. We're talking about suspending orders.
Yes, Your Honor, and it is our position that there was a reviewable order entered at the hearing on August 2nd.
Well, they can review it without suspending the effect of the trial court's order, can they not?
I'm sorry, I didn't...
They can review the order
without suspending it?
Yes.
Yes?
They did not do that in this case.
They reviewed the order and they reversed the...
That they entered this injunction pending the review on the merits of this order?
That's correct.
So there's been no merit review of the order, yet they suspended the order. Now, I'm suggesting to you they could do the review on the merits without suspending the effect of the order.
Well, Your Honor, in all candor, perhaps the best place for me to be today would be in front of the trial court presenting evidence of the need for an equitable injunction in this case. However...
But you already did that, didn't you?
I did not do... No one did that, apparently. Unfortunately, I was not aware of that.
You didn't ask for supersede the injunction of the trial court?
Ask to supersede the injunction of the trial court. Are you talking about the hearing that was held on September 7th?
Well, I don't recall the date. Did you ask to enjoin, supersede the injunction in
prior
the trial
court? Prior counsel did file such a motion, and it was set for hearing on September 7th.
And you lost?
That was lost, yes.
And you got there a second bite at the apple in the Court of Appeals.
So far, yes. That is the posture of the case.
The September 7th hearing was the one that
no one made an appearance at, Your Honor, and I wish I had a good explanation for why no one appeared at that hearing, particularly since I entered my appearance prior to the date of that hearing. I have been trying to find out why that occurred. In all candor, I found out that that is what occurred after the Court of Appeals after I had filed a motion in the Court of Appeals to review the order of the court, and once the Court of Appeals order was entered, it favorable to Dr. Boyd, the posture of the case was such that we did not return to the trial court.
You cite Rule 49 as a basis for the trial court, for the Court of Appeals authority for issuing this injunction. Rule 49 speaks about the sufficiency of the bond. What language specifically do you think in this Rule 49, Rules of Appellate Procedure, specifically authorize the Court of Appeals to issue this injunction?
Well, I think that the language that the order of the court is subject to the review, that the appellate court may require a change, and that the trial court may...
A change of what?
A change in the order of the trial court.
A change of the bond.
In the bond. However, I believe that there is case law that allows the Court of Appeals to reverse a refusal to grant supersedious bond, and I have submitted that to the court today. There's a case, Barish versus San Felipe ISD, closely analogous, in which a teacher requested that the trial court suspend or enter an injunction that the school district not refuse to renew his contract. It wasn't exactly a termination, but it was a refusal to renew the contract. The Court of Appeals reversed the refusal of the trial court to enter such an injunction. And that they did under the authority of Government Code 22221, not Rule 49, but I believe it's the most closely analogous case authority that we can cite.
Do you agree that the board's suspension runs, if at all, from its final affirmance?
Under the APTRA? I believe that that is correct, yes. I would also mention something else that has been touched upon, and that is that there was a three-year hiatus between the time that initial complaint was made against Dr. Boyd and the time that a hearing on the merits was held in this suspension. I would argue that latches or equitable estoppel were before the Court of Appeals, that they could consider that as part of the record in reversing the trial court's refusal to grant stay of judgment.
On those affirmative defenses that must be pled and to complete those, either at the trial court or the Court of Appeals level?
If they are affirmative defenses, I'm not sure what posture they would take in a case such as this where a motion by the licensee is made in the trial court. I would submit that it's some evidence that the Court of Appeals may have considered when it decided to suspend the judgment pending the outcome of this case on the appeal. Further, it's uncontested that there is no pecuniary harm to the state to be had because of Dr. Boyd's continued practice of chiropractic, and there is no allegation before this court on this record that any harm has come to any individual or to the public as a result of the continued injunctive order of the appellate court.
Does this record show the disposition of that DGPA case against the doctor?
No, Your Honor, it does not. That is not before the court on this appeal or on this mandamus.
Do you contest the state's posture in bringing this action by mandamus rather than by some attempt at some type of appeal? Or let me make it simpler. Do you think there's any adequate remedy at law for the state if its position is correct?
Well, I hesitate to respond this way, but I cannot think of an adequate remedy at law which would preserve the state's right if they are correct in their arguments. It is our position that they are not correct in their arguments, that there was jurisdiction to enter this order, and that there has been no clear abuse of discretion by the Court of Appeals because there is authority under the Texas Rules of Appellate Procedure and under the case law for the entry of an order similar to the one here. Unless there are other questions of the court, I believe that is my presentation.
Any further questions? Thank you, counsel.
Your Honor, we, with regard to the Rule 21 issue, it is our position there is no authority to enter an original injunction to preserve the status quo pending appeal. That the Courts of Appeals' only original jurisdiction is to enter injunctions to preserve the subject matter of the jurisdiction, of the jurisdiction of the matter that the Court is going to take under consideration. One of the cases raised by opposing counsel, we concede, is squarely contra that. However, the Courts of Appeals, the overwhelming majority of Court of Appeals decisions are in our favor with regard to the subject matter of the appeal. The Amex Warehouse case, it's clear that simply having to rebuild a practice or suffering monetary damages is not the equivalent of the subject matter of an appeal. Insofar as Dr. Boyd characterizes this review, this case, what the Court of Appeals did, as the review of the trial court's decision under Rule 49. Again, we reiterate that he had the opportunity to present evidence. He did not. Under the circumstances, it's a clear abuse of discretion for the Court of Appeals to overturn the trial court's decision where the licensee had totally failed to prosecute his case. As to the proper mode of bringing this case before this court, I would draw the court's attention to the Klein Independent School District versus the 14th Court of Appeals. In that case, this court reviewed the Court of Appeals' review of a trial court's decision on an injunction. A utility line was being put in over the school district. The trial court refused or dissolved an injunction pending appeal, refused to continue it. And this court didn't focus on what the Court of Appeals had done. This court focused on what the trial court had done. And it's our position that this court either looks under Rule 49 at whether the trial court had abused its discretion. In this case, there was a failure to prosecute the motion to suspend enforcement of judgment. Or under Rule 121, that the Court of Appeals erred because granting an injunction in this case is not necessary to preserve the subject matter of the appeal. We're aware that the licensee will probably suffer monetary damages from not being able to practice. However, monetary damages are not the equivalent of the subject matter of the case. That is not the equivalent of, say, a corporation, whether it is in existence or it is not in existence. And if there are no questions, we will give back to the court what time remains.
Are there any questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes arguments in the second cause. The court will now take a brief recess.